The Sacred Changemakers podcast is supported by Coaches Business School, helping the world's most caring coaches build a purpose-driven and profitable business that makes a meaningful impact in our world. Check out their unique frameworks and methods to help you transform and grow your business. Now is the time to build a bridge from what you want in life to include what the world needs. You can do well in business and do good. And together, we can make a meaningful difference. Find out more at coachesbusinessschool.com.
Welcome back to the Sacred Changemakers podcast. And today's guest is Tabitha Scott, a business futurist and executive sustainability officer for Gilbane, a $7 billion privately held construction company. Tabitha guides organizations through rapid change using nature's time-tested patterns to boost growth and adaptability. Her influential voice on the Forbes Business Council in 2023 and her authorship of the Nautilus award-winning and best-selling book Trust Your Animal Instincts place her at the vanguard of modern innovation. And Tabitha's upcoming book, Powering Change, highlights the predictable and transformational benefits of leveraging human and technology dynamics for greater financial success. Tabitha's career highlights include significant contributions at the intersection of business and nature. She served on the Executive Office Roundtable on Climate Change during the Obama administration and was a delegate representing the built sector for the Presidential Climate Action Plan under the Bush administration. Additionally, Tabitha received recognition from the White House for her work using AI, smart technology data, and positive behavior change science to help military communities reduce energy costs. Three net zero communities and the world's largest rooftop solar project were also developed through her leadership over a decade ago. So what are we going to be talking about today? Well, the title of our episode really helps you understand our conversation because we're exploring the importance of bridging divides and harnessing nature's wisdom for global impact. Tabitha shares her journey from burnout to empowerment, emphasizing the importance of business and leadership in creating positive change for the world's future. We explore topics such as the way we as humans in the modern world find ourselves disconnected from nature. We consider the impact of technology and social media, and also the necessity of how we might change the way we live our lives to address things like climate change and other environmental and global changes that we're now facing. So join us as we learn from Tabitha's wisdom and explore an organic path to sustainability and inclusive global impact. And Tabitha's advice is second to none in this field. So if you're looking for some help with how to create success for yourself and also for the planet, then this is a conversation you won't want to miss. So without further ado, let me introduce you to my good friend, Tabitha Scott. Hey, Tabitha, welcome to the Sacred Changemakers podcast. How are you doing, my friend?
I'm well. Thanks, Jane.
Oh, I'm so looking forward to our conversation. I mean, we haven't known each other for that long, but I just feel such a resonance with you and your work, and I can't wait to share you with our audience here. Now, before we do, I just want to kind of acknowledge that our listeners have just heard your professional bio. And we like to start kind of going beneath the surface a little bit. So I'd love you to tell us a little bit about the real life human that lies beneath that. Who's she?
Well, she grew up on a small farm in Elizabethtown, Kentucky. And I couldn't be more grateful for those roots, pun intended. Because my parents were elementary school teachers and they had us out planting our own gardens. We learned about growth cycle. We learned about the importance of there's a time for everything, for planning, for planting, for harvesting. And we learned about animals and responsibility and care. I had lots of pets. It was not a production farm. It was a wonderful place where I had so many friends. I had 4 horses and 3 cats and 2 dogs and 6 chickens, 2 ducks, and an older sister. So
oh my word.
it was quite a fun place. And
wow.
So I learned it's funny growing up in that environment, you appreciate family and, you know, hard work. And I certainly fell in love with nature, and that has stuck with me into today. It's my life passion, but didn't really have any thoughts about where to go for college, those types of things. I learned as I went. I thought, well, I want to be in business. So I picked the biggest universe, the biggest city in Kentucky. I never even dreamed about going outside the state at that point in my life. And there you go. That's how I started with my undergrad, and things have gone from there.
Oh my gosh. It's so interesting. As you're speaking, I can hear your passion for nature as you talk, and it kind of makes sense in a way, because our title for today's conversation, Bridging Divides, right? Harnessing Nature's Wisdom for Global Impact. Now, they're not really two things we normally think about going together, but as you share your background, I get the sense that you're someone who kind of walks the edges between different worlds. You're someone who's used to kind of bringing maybe different worlds together.
It's interesting, because one bit of advice that Dad gave me that I do cherish, he said, study up in the things you don't necessarily like, and that will differentiate you. So I studied technology and, you know, financial types of things, and I was really more of a marketing people person, but it gave me an advantage in one place or the other. So I took my background in finance and banking and was doing electronic payments. And for me, I was saving trees. You know, we were converting all of these companies from paper checks and paper reports to electronics. And then took that a step further. What do I really want to do? I want to help with emissions and health of, you know, the planet and health of each other. The asthma rates were growing so high. And so I thought, what can I do to accelerate the adoption of renewables? And this was back in 2004. So I went to work for a couple of my clients doing sustainability. And this was kind of when green building was emerging in the US. And the more I became educated, I went through electrical engineering to learn more about our investments and our risks, and then went through holistic energy work, learning about how the body's electrical systems work. And I had this big epiphany, Jane, that everything's made of the same energy, like everything, even businesses. And so because we are all made of that same vibrating energy, we go through the same growth curves, the same cycles, the same patterns. And so business and the things we do day to day become highly predictable.
Wow. And I can just imagine there's some, you know, executives listening to us speak here and listening to you particularly saying they become highly predictable, because looking out in the business world today, I know there's a sense that it's anything but predictable out there. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, what would you say to those people in terms of, you know, what nature's really got to do with their day-to-day leadership and their business?
Oh, wow. There are so many things that we could unpack there. Nature's been at this for 4 billion years of adapting and evolving, and modern business has been at it about 300. And so for every business crisis in the world today, nature has an answer. So we can pick one. We can pick diversity. We can pick networks. We can talk about any of these examples. The growth cycle is the one that makes things most predictable. For example, when Southwest Airlines had that crisis last year at Christmas, and they, you know, their systems weren't ready, what have you, every company has to go through the same cycle: birth, growth, maturity, and decline. And you hope to jump onto the next curve. You can't skip from birth straight over to decline. It's just not, the physics of the world don't work that way. And what they had done is they hired someone for the growth period who was great to help them scale and refine. He was great at creating efficiencies and finding risks. And then they were at the top of the curve last year at Christmas. well, instead of hiring someone to as a regeneration person, like the founder of Southwest originally was, someone who could start the new growth curve, they hired someone exactly like him who had been at the company, you know, 20, 30 years, and he was refining more. So they weren't interested in new technologies. They were interested in squeezing more out of a mature company. So because they weren't reinventing and they kept hiring, you know, leaders like that. So that's what I mean about it. It's so predictable. You know, you need reinvention. So hire the right leader at the right time in that growth curve.
That makes a lot of sense.
And each of us has a place along the growth curve. I'm an extreme at the tip of the curve, live in the future. People that are further up would be, you know, they're executors. They love getting things done. And people at the top are risk averse. And so you wouldn't want to hire an auditor or an accounting, you know, person that's at the tip of the curve. And you wouldn't want your innovation director or strategy director to be, you know, at the top. So you have to get the right person for the right seat and you'll avoid burnout.
That makes a lot of sense. It really does. I mean, I wonder how you integrate these principles into your leadership and the work that you do. Because do you have like a moment or an experience from your career where maybe you witness the transformative power of these principles that you're speaking about, nature's principles, in a business context?
Oh, so many times, so many times. One of them is looking at diversity. So if you check out nature, the most resilient prairies and fields and the way of nature, even as a stream or a current flows down, it easily adapts around the rocks. And so everything in nature is made to be adaptable and malleable. And the more we structure and silo our organizations, the more we get rid of that. So since our business is no longer linear, like cause and effect, due to the accelerating pace of change, you know, due to social media, you don't know what's going to happen. We have to build those things back into our businesses like nature does. So one example that comes to mind is we had a brand new app that we were creating. This was a Fortune 300 retailer. It was during COVID. And the people that they asked to create this app, it was a first time thing. It wasn't off the shelf, COTS software. So it was something brand new. You would want people at the beginning of that growth curve, then at least on the team, but they were all engineers, which tend to be at the top of the curve. 90% of Purdue engineers that graduate are at the top of the curve. And so they had people in the wrong risk profile, you know, creating it. Then you had to have a very high degree of complexity to be a generalist, not a specialist, to see how is this going to impact my mobile phone across my laptop system? What about whenever I get to the store? What's the sensor going to be when they pull into the parking spot? How will we notify the people on their headsets, you know, that someone's waiting? So that you have all this integration to think about. So you need generalists. There were no generalists on the team. And so again, looking at how nature works and then placing your team members in the right places, or at least getting a diverse blend of them, is so important. And it launched, they got one star. It was a big flop. And we looked at that and we rearranged and we brought people, you know, that were thinking in the ways that we needed them to think. And then within 2 months, it had 4.6 stars rating. So it's just about getting people at the place where they are energized. And isn't that what it's all about, is finding what energizes you most and then finding a way to work in that, or as close as you can to it. Do more of what you love every day and you'll burn out less.
I love that. I really do. And you and I, you know, we've had some over the last few months, we've had some great conversations about energy and flow. And what I'm hearing you speak to here is really, I mean, I suppose it's my language that I would use, but you're really harnessing the energy of the organization. You're really, it's like an enablement, enabling the individuals to really sit on the right seat in the bus and then from that place, then, of course, you have a team that is, you know, performs way better because they're in flow. Is that the language you would use, Tabitha, or would you say something
Absolutely. else? Absolutely. And I love the term flow, probably from a different perspective than other leaders, because I see it all as electricity. And if you want to power your organization, what do you do with electricity? You have to connect it first. My lamp over here is not going to work until it's plugged in. And so people need to be connected, everyone in that organization. Then direction. The more you can focus someone's direction and they're aligned with it based on what they love to do, then you get that Venturi effect. You know, back to the laws of nature, it will go faster and faster and more powerful. And so that's what it's about. Now, the fuel that you pour on the top of that to make the energy go even more, the potential, that's your purpose, right? Mm. So all of these things come back to the laws of physics and nature.
Mm, that's great. Now, you know, we're talking here quite a lot about the business context. And one of the things that I know both you and I are very interested in, and I know a lot of our audiences, is the idea of leadership. Kind of not just leadership as we've known it in the past, let's say, but leadership that's needed for the future to shape our world in better ways, not just the organization that the leader may be working in, but really starting to play the long game a little bit, look a little bit further afield. And in your book, Trust Your Animal Instincts, right, you talk about nature's patterns specifically for innovation. So how can, you know, if we've got a listener here listening to us talking here, and they're thinking, okay, well, you know, my organization wants to be on the maybe the right side of history. We want to be shaping the future in a way that is not just in that for-profit sense, but we've got a wider kind of impact that we want to make. How can businesses tap into these patterns to drive, you know, I think of it as beginning with maybe creative thinking and then moving into real sustainable transformation. I mean, what advice would you give Tabitha?
I think the most important thing that I would say to them is think local, which
right
might sound overly simple, but there is no one size fits all in the world today. And the more that we have grown away from our roots, the more that we have gotten away from what's around us, the more we are missing opportunity, especially in the business place. So let's talk about that from like in buildings. I'm in the built sector. I work with Gilbane, which is a privately held organization, and they build large buildings, net zero buildings that use as much energy as they're producing. So they're not putting additional emissions, you know, into the world. And they're thinking about the long term of, you know, how can I build this facility now with a university, for example, Eastern Michigan University is a good example of how can they build today and spend a little bit more money. But now the university is spending their, you know, day-to-day operations on books and professors and teachers and classroom needs instead of putting it up in smoke and energy and waste and water costs. And so it's about taking that long-term view of what is best locally for this group of people. And you look at our food. We just watched this documentary the other day about, and there's many out there about the food production industry and the feeding lots and the conditions, especially, you know, chickens, cattle, hogs go through, and it is horrific. And the amount of carbon embedded in that process, just the energy for that. James Cameron's wife did a podcast with Oprah, and she talked about doing vegan, starting with just like one meal a day and the carbon footprint difference that that made. And it inspired me to really think about my food and then look into the health of the food. What's it actually like by the time they put so much preservative in it and it gets to you? So leadership, businesses, our own health, all health comes back to thinking about what's surrounding me right now. Now, how can I make best use of those resources? Resources that are natural resources, human resources, financial resources. What's local? How do I leverage it?
I love that. Because in many ways, it feels like it's bringing us full circle in a way back to, you know, as you speak that, there's a word that comes up for me that we don't often use in a business or leadership context. And that word is, it's like I'm remembering what you're saying. Now, I don't mean that literally, but it's almost yes. like there's a primal knowing inside of me that kind of goes, yeah, of course, we've gone too far. It's almost like we've gone too far astray in our thinking yes. to the big visions yes. and really the answers, you know, lie locally, like what you're saying. If we can take care of what's in our kind of immediate locale and we can take care of our own responsibilities in there, then that ripple effect, of course, goes out globally.
Absolutely. And I would say, Jane, if you want to go faster and faster and faster, you know, the pace of technological change during the whole year 2000 is now replicated every 30 seconds, right?
Oh my
so
God.
We have to
really?
Go. It's true. It's true, true. Look it up.
Wow.
So it's going so fast. How are you going to keep up with that? And the only way to do it, people immediately say, well, I'm going to look to the future. I'm going to jump to the future, you know, and leading innovation in these companies, that's how companies think. And I would challenge that. And I would say, no, remember your ancestors, remember your past, because there is no waste mm-hmm. in nature. None. Everything is regenerative. It's a completely 100% efficient system. Now it's out of balance now because we have created this problem as human parasites, but nature's going to be fine. The planet's going to be fine. It might kick us off, right? But it has so much wisdom that we can learn from, and we need to remember and reflect to those laws. You know, mycelium networks, mm-hmm. our friends, the mushrooms, have these mycelium networks underground. And they connect trees, shrubs, you know, all things underground. Well, they get their payment, you know, from the tree. They take a little bit as nutrients for themselves, but they are so sophisticated, much more than generative AI. Any technology we have today cannot even touch the mycelium network. Mm. It's insane. 300 feet of mycelium network under your feet right now.
Yeah. It's amazing because I was reading Merlin Sheldrake's book and about this, and he was in a way likening the mycelium network to technology and AI. Yes. And I know you've been in both of those worlds. So what are the connections that you see there?
I've dedicated a whole chapter of my book. Yeah. Powering Change. There's a whole chapter committed to mycelium networks because there's so many things we can learn from them. One is, you know, connectivity in a symbiotic way. This is not a conflict way, not a masculine, I'm going to beat you and there's not enough for all of us. It's in a way that they literally, the mycelium, will take information from the tree that says, I'm not getting enough water right now. Or, you know, and so in that case, they shoot the seed further away. The mycelium might say there's a fungus over on these trees. So send your seeds whenever you spawn over to the other direction to avoid getting them all. Like it's so sophisticated. And we're just starting to get at the cusp of generative AI and things that people are so afraid of. And I'm like, look under your feet. Remember these things that have been here for millions of years. And there are the answers for our future.
I love that.
And it's so symbiotic.
And, you know, it's so interesting that when I look out into the world today, one of the things that I notice is how much fear there is, particularly about the future, mm-hmm. right? And, you know, and I look out and we've got wars raging in different parts of the world. And, you know, and politics aside, all the other things aside, these are very human problems to me, right?
Yes.
And there's a part of me that can't quite believe that we are still doing what we were doing in the 14th, 15th century. Yes. We're still trying to kill each other over yes. difference in a way. And yet that's not how nature seems to deal with difference. You know, like that's you right. just used the word there, symbiotic, and that's just something that's a given in nature. And I just wonder if you have any sense of how we as humans have come kind of strayed so far from mm-hmm. our original nature, because my audience knows, and you know as well, Tabitha, that I visited Ecuador in October. And that was one of the things that coming out of the jungle after a couple of weeks living with the indigenous and coming back into the modern world that kind of hit me a little bit like a truck, mm-hmm. that mm-hmm. we've strayed so far from our original nature. And I don't know that I have the answers why, but I'd love to hear you speak to that in some way.
Yeah, I think it's because we are disconnected. Go back to our analogy about how energy flows. We're going to become less and less connected from energy when we're disconnected from the source. We're living our lives in stacks of towers of concrete that, you know, our feet don't even touch the ground anymore. We're not out in nature. And when you talked about trust your animal instincts, I got so burnt out from being so disconnected and living in a perfectionist driven corporate environment that I had lived in the jungle for almost 3 months in Costa Rica. And, right. you know, it wasn't your luxury deal. It was out there with no Wi-Fi, no phone that worked, you know, no radio, no TV. And it was the best absolute experience of my life. Because I was able to reconnect with the animals, with plant life, with the rivers, the streams, and the answers were all there right in front of me. So I think it's, I'm not saying that it's bad. There is no bad or good, but the more we take ourselves away and have no exposure to the natural world, the more defunct our businesses and our lives are going to be. And if you look at social media, for example, 40% of people are getting their news from social media. Well, everyone knows that AI runs in the background on Facebook, LinkedIn, all of these things. And so you're only getting the more and more and more polarized view from, you know, based on your likes and clicks and your friends. So you're not even getting reality. And so the more we focus on getting our reality from a place that isn't real, we have lost touch with reality. And go back to local. Mm-hmm. What's going on around me? What can I see in my community? What can I do about that? And how does that play out in the world? I think the overwhelm comes from, and you know, I have a child that really struggles with this in his mid-20s. They're working 80 hours a week, that generation. They cannot afford to buy a home. You know, the first generation home buyers now, the average age is like something like 50 years old, right?
Wow.
How does that happen in a society where people can't afford to feed their families or even survive? Mm. And it's the system that is so broken because it's so far away from reality. And, you know, back in the day, we're designed to live as communal mm-hmm. tribes, and we all helped each other and we raised each other's children. And it wasn't until the domestication of wheat and the economic structures that created the structures we use today, like marriage, because they needed to know who the wheat lots went to, you know, which children would get which lots. And it, when you really look at that history, it's staggering how financial systems and the abstract concepts, you know, money's not real, it's an abstract construct. Mm-hmm. That took us away from what is real and what powers us. So we're losing our power source.
Yeah. And I'm glad you've gone to power, because it's really interesting. I was on a hike in the Ecuadorian rainforest, and a tribal shaman, I was walking with him and talking to him. And one of the things he said to me was, it's no wonder you have lost your soul in the modern world, right? And he didn't just mean me, he meant all of us.
Yes.
And I was like, so what do you mean by that? And he said, well, He said, when I look at the, and we were talking about it earlier, when I look at the food system, you're so detached from the source of your food.
Yes.
How can you receive nature's wisdom through your food? How
yes.
do you know what to do on any day? Because you're not getting the messages from your food. And I remember thinking, it was like a complete like 180 in my mind. Mm-hmm. I was like, I have never looked at food in that way. And yet it was so obvious.
Yes. How do we think that what we put in our bodies doesn't affect everything
right.
that we do? There's this great book by Sadhguru that I read, and he talks through the process of how energy converts from its source. And there's many books about, you know, you get more energy from a apple, you know, an avocado, than you do a piece of pizza or, you know, whatever. But it's thinking about the source. And you look back to indigenous people that lived here in the Americas and how they respected their food source. You know, the buffalo was everything from a water pouch source, a source of blankets and materials to build their homes with. You know, they could do things with the bones, carve different things of that and eat the meat. And they were grateful and they understood the cycle and they cared for them with respect. And how much different is that now than the feedlots with thousands and thousands of cattle that, you know, just basically stand at a trough and eat grain all day, or the chickens? I mean, if people don't change one other thing in their life, please don't buy eggs that are not like pasture eggs. Cage-free or a little better, that means they can have like, you know, a couple feet to stand up instead of being in a metal cage all day, every day. But pasture-raised eggs, there's your local tip.
I love that. I do. And it's so true, though, what you're saying. It's almost like in modern society, we don't think about these things. Like I have grandchildren and I don't know what access do they have, right, mm-hmm. to this kind of information as they're growing mm-hmm. up. It's not in our education system. It's not in our business systems. It's not necessarily in our colleges unless you specialize in this area.
Yes.
What I'm meaning is it's missing from general socialization, general education. It's mm-hmm. just kind of missing.
Yes.
And I just wonder, like, you know, when you look to the future, Tabitha, you know, what's your hope for where we're headed? Because you are, as a futurist as well, I'm sure you've got some sense of what's coming.
Yeah, I have a unique perspective on that, Jane. And it's come from all the things that have failed throughout my career and my life. I think I've learned so much more from those failings. Mm. What I learned was that you can educate yourself so much on you know, pollution, money issues, poverty, on all the things. But unless you can get people to change their behavior, nothing will matter. And so I think thinking about the coming together, and not in an altruistic way necessarily, but in a behavioral way, we focus on the things that polarize us most. And I'll give you an example. Some of the leading climate experts that are like rock stars in the world, they use language like, you have stolen my childhood. Mm-hmm. You have, the fossil fuel industry has ruined our planet. You are the travesty. Well, now you have alienated the 35 million people in that industry and their families mm-hmm. from the conversation. And so whether it's true or not, whether people perceive truth in their outcry, what I would challenge is that the future will be shaped in a positive way only when we can use the language of coming together. And what I mean by that is people in the fossil fuel industry and in the renewable energy industry, they both want safety. They both want to be able to support their families. They both want, you know, security. They both want a clean environment. You know, And until we can focus on the things everyone wants and stop focusing on the polarity, and you know, social media exacerbates that polarity, we will not come together as a society. So my wishful thinking is that, and what I try to practice in business and shaping policies and, you know, and the communities around me, how can I be a coming together in a non-polarizing way? And that's why I'm just wickedly excited about this book, because who is upset and offended by saying nature has wisdom? Mm-hmm. I'm not saying anybody's polluting anything. Right. I'm not saying anybody's doing anything wrong. I'm saying, look, if you want to be fast forward, if you want to be more innovative, adaptable, productive, efficient, here's some answers from nature. And guess what's even better? It's free. Mm. It's free, right? So this is my big, you know, shot over the bow of a 100% different approach to save the dying planet, panic and do something, because it just freaks people out and they can't get into action. And they naturally want to get defensive, because back to the laws of physics, an equal and opposite reaction. So you're not going to make progress until you figure out where everybody wants to go. Safety, love, you know, making a wage, a living, healthy air to breathe, right? Healthy water to drink. Everybody wants to go there, right? Together. So accelerate that instead of creating polarity with your language and your actions.
So let me speak to the elephant in the room here, because I don't know if anybody listening, you know, would actually fall into this category, but I know, because you've told me before, 40% of people in the US still don't see climate as an important issue. And when we think about, it's so funny, when I have conversations with leaders about things like corporate sustainability, straight away they either jump to climate change or diversity and inclusion, right? That's kind mm-hmm. of the threads that people around me at least make. So why do you think that is? Why is it that we still have this 40% that think it's, you know, it's not real in some way, or it's not important enough for us to pay attention to?
Because they feel like it's fake news, and they're being told right. it's fake news, and they're being told this is just another cycle. And because they're being told that so strongly, then why would they believe it?
Yeah.
You know, and further, they're being attacked instead of having a hand reached out to say, let me help. And so I, for years, since 2005, whenever I've led sustainability, I call it the S word, because I'm working predominantly at that time in the Southeastern United States, and nobody oh, wow. gives a rat's ass right. about energy, because we're paying, right. you know, 5 cents a kilowatt hour. It's not expensive. Fossil fuels are subsidized more than anything else in this country. And nobody, no president is going to be that guy that adjusts the level. Like in the UK, you pay for the cost of fuel, right? The yep. full total yep. cost. There is no capitalism around energy in the United States. It's completely subsidized around the fossil fuel industry. So as long as people are being told the truth, and it is indeed not true, they're just doing what they think they're supposed to do. That's all.
Right.
And it's that language that I think people that are your listeners and people that are passionate about the environment and things, we have to recognize that it is just like certain language to certain ethnic people, certain language that you wouldn't use in other places. There's a high sensitivity around the words environment, sustainability, planet, you know, climate change. We were told not to say global warming, it's climate change, you know, back in 2008, whenever I worked with Mr. Gore's office. And because of my financial background, I always talked about climate change in terms of dollars. How's it increasing your risk? So they would send me to the Republican audiences like Duke Energy. But now it's evolved beyond climate change to pick a topic. You know, it's a greater risk. We need more resilience instead of sustainability. And there's a whole movement. Fast Company, the Wall Street Journal, New York Times have all run articles about green hushing. And it's literally this backlash of companies. This is so strong in the United States that they are repealing and recalling. They're not calling it ESG anymore, environmental, you know, they're taking all those words out and they're saying like corporate responsibility. I'm not judgy one way or the other. I don't care what words they use. I care what kind of results are moving forward in a positive way. Use whatever word speaks to your audience. That's the first rule of speaking, right? Know your audience and speak to them. So the more we become entrenched in our language of save the planet, the more polarized the other side's going to get. And until we start coming together and say, hey, there's lots of lessons out here we could learn. Let's figure it out together. Let's get curious about that and see what we can learn from this thing. Well, once it's a source of wisdom for you, you're going to want to keep it around and preserve it.
I love that. You seem to me to be a master of language in this way of really helping people bridge that divide, you know, and bridge that gap so that it's, I mean, you just use the word wisdom there. And it's interesting because as we come into this year in my own self-reflections, I've been feeling this shift from knowledge to wisdom. I feel it in myself, in my own body, but I also am beginning to see the thread externally in my clients, in, you know, in external life. This kind of, I'm going to call it a yearning because it feels primal. Knowledge is something I think we're socialized to accrue, you know, especially as young adults and everything, you know, go to college, where you're going to do, what you're going to do, what's your career? And I can see that in myself. And now for me, it's not about knowledge. I think it's wisdom that's going to save us.
Absolutely. And I would argue in my woo-woo way that all knowledge has existed for all time and we have access to it. And if we stop long enough, if we can allow it to come to us, you know, Jane, my biggest breakthroughs have been when I am allowing and meditating. And literally when I become frenetic, I've got too much to do. I've got too much to do. I stop and I observe what is around me right now. Who are the people around me right now? What are the messages I'm observing? What are the... And the answers are all right there, but we don't slow down enough to allow it to come to us. And we're so separated from our ancient wisdom. We know what to do. We just can't listen to our intuition if we're busy talking all the time.
Which brings me to your two books, because in a way, I feel this is like an arc of transformation that you stand for in the world. And your first book, Trust Your Animal Instincts, right? Your second book, Powering Change, right? When I look at like the arc of transformation that you're speaking to in these books, it seems to me that your work has evolved over time. So if I may, I'd love to ask you, when you look at your own evolution or the evolution of your body of work, Tabitha, you know, how would you describe that? Because it seems to me Powering Change has got a different texture to it than the first book.
Yeah, I think that power comes from pain. Power comes from pain. And so my first book is about getting real. And I was so worried about the shoulds. Should I release this book? Should I tell anyone about it? Is it going to ruin my professional image? You know, this is the kid that was CEO of her first company by age 30. Like, I was so driven my whole career and had so many shoulds. I was shoulding all over myself. And this book is very raw and it talks about my journey to burnout. It talks about divorce. It talks about unexpected pregnancies, you know? And I think until you can be the world and be its pain, I am a mama. I was a single mom. You know, I would share a box of rice with my son because that's all I could afford. All of the things that make me powerful are the things that broke me down. And I think until people understand that we all can be authentic. And that's where your power comes from. So the first book was about level setting. I'm not perfect. I'm not this amazing executive. I don't wake up in the morning looking like this, you know. I'm real, you know, and I have flaws. I have many flaws, and it's perfectly okay. They make me strong. It's like is it Kintsugi vases in Japan? You know, the more they're broken, the more beautifully and more strong they're put back together with gold. And so that's how I felt with the first book, was I wanted to inspire women everywhere that it doesn't matter what you're born into. We're all the same energy, and you have the capacity to do anything. The second book was years of reflection after that, and it's over 15 years of research in corporate life. And it's about, how does change happen? How does positive change happen? And in this lifetime, in this little blip, my role is to be the voice of nature without question. Now, how can I make the biggest impact? That's with companies, because they're making the biggest problems. And so with that target audience, how can I reach them in a language and with wisdom that they will understand, and not just be another polarizing piece of noise out there shouting at them and telling them how bad they are and how many new rules they have to implement and how many new things they have to track? They already hear that. I want to talk to them about good news. Here's something free. And every business model you can make up will fall somewhere on that growth curve, because it is the source of truth and wisdom that you need to go forward. So to me, this is the first in a series of books that's going to examine, how do we change? How do we power change in a positive way, so you can get your profits, your productivity, so you can get your potential as a company? And it's not a but, it's an and. You can regenerate back into the world, and for your employees and your workers, you can give them a respectable wage.
You know, out of everything you said there, and it was really profound and elegantly stated, the one word that really sticks with me is that little tiny conjunction, which is and. Because that's what we talk about all the time at Sacred Changemakers, is, you know, this idea that yes, you can fulfill individual needs and the collective at the same time. And I know that's what powers your work, but you said something interesting. You said you work with, you know, businesses and organizations because they're the ones creating the biggest problems. So I do want to ask you, you know, what role do you think business can play in the changes that the world needs for a better future?
I think they can have a tremendous role. Back in Kentucky, there was this study that we talk about sometimes, and it's called The Pony in the Poop. And there were these two young boys, there were twins, identical twins, and there was this study, and they put the first one in this barn full of poo, horse poo, cow poo, poo everywhere. And the child sat down after a few minutes and cried, and they took him away. You know, it was awful. He was just so upset by this and so frustrated that they put him there. Now, his twin, they put in after that, and he's running up to the loft. He's running and opening the doors in the stalls. He's all over the place. And they're like, "What is wrong with you? Like, why are you so excited?" And he's like, "With all this poop, there's got to be a pony in here somewhere." And so when I say that businesses are a big problem, I see that as an equal and opposite. For every peak, there's a trough, right? Mm-hmm. And so all of that poop, there's a big pony there, because businesses are the ones paying the politicians and the lobbyists. They're the ones that change. And my partner, Chris, and I, we talk about, is it politics? Is it that where you change first, the laws? Is it policy, or is it corporate? And my opinion is that it's corporate, because they shape the laws, you know, pay the campaign money. So the source of big, big change can come from companies, because there's so much money and because they employ so many people. So if you focus at the top, this book is targeted right towards the top. That's where my message is targeted, to the C-suite, to the leaders, to the managers, because they can change lives. You can talk to one person and change 30,000 lives. So while I'm working at the top to change these lives, all the solutions in nature will bubble up from the bottom, because nothing grows from top down in nature. It will come from the bottom up, but you got to have the people at the top recognize that and value that for what it is. Your solutions live at the bottom.
I love the way you've kind of put that into, it's almost like a polarity, but it feels in reach when you describe it in the way that you did. So when you think about, you know, you look out into the business world today and, well, into the world in general, and see the pressing global challenges, you know, and opportunities, right? I think it's both that organizations kind of are facing today. Like, what would you kind of like to see business focusing on in the coming years to be able to create the positive and regenerative impact that we're speaking to here?
Yeah, I think the biggest challenge for businesses is they don't understand the and that we were talking about. They don't understand the and. They're right. Still thinking, I can be sustainable. And by sustainable, I don't mean I'm going to join a checklist and throw a solar panel on my roof. I mean, resilient as an organization over time, profitable. It's a living organization. So thriving is what I mean when I say sustainable. They think I can be that, or I can, you know, make money. And until they see the and, that's the trouble. And when Wall Street values short-term profits versus long-term success and value, you're creating value. I'll use, instead of short-term, long-term, short-term games or value. So you are creating an asset value if you're investing in your employees, if you're investing in your assets in a wise way. But that's a mind shift that has to happen for leaders, for their boards. And I think it's the way our Western society is set up. You know, if you, I love that study where if you hold up a picture of a jungle and there's like a tiger in there and some other things, if you hold it up in, you know, Asia Pacific and certain regions of the world and ask them what it is, they'll say, it's a jungle. And some of them will say, it's a jungle with a tiger. If you hold it up in America, people will say, it's a tiger. That's it. Because all we're focused on is, give me the three bullets where I can make the most money right now, you know? And our brains are just wired that way now. And so you're missing so much opportunity for potential, for profits, for productivity, for innovation, when all you see is right in front of your nose.
It makes so much sense when you speak in that way. It really does. So I want to ask you, in your own words, and in some ways you've already answered this, I think, but like, what is your work in service of? How would you describe the vision or the results that you would like to see come from your work, Tabitha?
The results I would like to see come is for people to view nature in a way that they revere and respect its wisdom. So this lifetime for me, what success will look like, and I'm a blip in time. So who knows what change will happen during this lifetime? I want to be something of a foundation that others can build on, of looking forward by looking back at the wisdom and the power and the awe of nature. You know, we just moved to the Boulder area. So we're on the Front Range here of the Rocky Mountains back in April. And every day that I see those majestic mountains, I am just in awe and grateful of nature around me. And I don't have to make a expensive living. You know, the absurdity that we own property at all is it's an absurd construct. The land is the land, and it's all of our land, and these are all our resources, and they're all to be enjoyed. And so that's what I'm hoping we can shift our mindset. And that's my goal in this lifetime, is to look at it differently instead of, hey, resources, you know, animals, what can you do for me? How can you feed me? How can you make me more money? Instead, what can I learn from you? You know, what's the wisdom of the snake that sheds its skin and lets go of the things that are holding it back from growth? You know, what are the things we can learn from the bat that has to risk plunging to its death to fly for the first time because it can't take off from the ground? You know, what can we learn from all of these animals and streams that go around the barriers and the rocks and adapt to what's in their way to form these amazing canyons and spaces that with persistence and with direction, we can really do anything. And it might take time and it might be beyond this lifetime, but why not try?
I'm noticing as you're speaking, it's kind of, there's two parts of me. There's one part of me that's like, yes, and I can hear what you're saying, and I'm going to reference the word othering. It's like there's a part of me that goes, yes, I can learn from these other things. I can learn from nature. It feels separate from me. And then there's another part of me that's like, I already know all that because I'm in the web of life.
Yes.
And I'm already connected. And it's really interesting, yes, because it's almost like I could say it's the socialized part that says I can learn from the difference, if you,
yes,
like.
Yes.
And then it's the, I don't know what I'd call it, the soul, the essence, what feels like truth.
Yes.
When I know that I am a part of it, how could I not be?
Absolutely, absolutely. And I would say the context is, if I'm with my journey group, if I'm, yeah, with my hot yoga tribe, you know,
yeah,
there is no separation.
Yeah.
It's just, I am.
Yeah.
And all things are, and we are all in harmony. If I'm talking to corporate America, as I'm trying to do with Powering Change, you know,
yeah,
this book is squarely focused on leaders and corporate business. And so it's very, very separate from nature. Their relationship is using resources and, you know, how do I use it? How do I use it to convert into dollars versus how do I live in harmony with it? And they're waking up. You know, I can honestly say that when I first started working in sustainability, it was for foreign owned companies that had to pay carbon taxes. And it was a very rare thing here. The US Green Building Council was just getting started. Now there are thousands and thousands, and all of the key consulting companies are, you know, staffing up with sustainability people. And so it's becoming more and more of a necessity. And I credit our younger generations and thought leaders like you and the change makers that are consistently pushing and pushing, and it's going to tip
it
to
is.
Where they're thinking that way, but it we're not there yet.
And I, if I may, I just want to highlight your genius of what you just did there, because I think what you're doing is, this is your genius, speaking both the languages of corporate and the language of nature and inclusivity in the web of life. It's like you can speak to both, which is how we bridge these divides that we're talking about. And so that makes me really feel really confident, Tabitha, about you and your work, and that, of course, how can you not harness nature's wisdom for global impact? It just feels inevitable as you speak.
Thank you. Thank you so much. It's odd that you used that language, because I've called myself the interpreter and I speak the language of the dollar. And we didn't get the world's largest solar array at Fort Bliss, Texas, because I pitched it with sustainability. We got it because I said, you own this asset, these homes and this property for 50 years. You can reduce your OPEX and increase your IRR by 3 points if you invest in a second asset on top of those. So that's a very different conversation,
right,
than let's put up a solar array that, yeah, every year is going to reduce the amount of carbon that New York City puts off, right? That's what I wanted to say. But I couldn't say that. I was in Texas, for goodness sake.
Oh my gosh. So I'm noticing the time, Tabitha. We could carry on talking all day, but I just want to ask you one final question. And it's just simply this. If there's something that you would have liked to cover, something to share with our audience that we haven't had time to get to, or maybe it's just some words of wisdom that you'd like to leave our audience with, what might it be?
I think it's, you know, in looking at the messages that I've had to get out into the world and I felt compelled about, first is trust your instincts, trust that you know the answer, that the wisdom is already there. And sometimes you just have to remove yourself from the freneticism of daily life to hear it. But that's really, really important. And the second piece is to power change in a positive way and live by example. I think, you know, Jane, you and I have talked a bit about it, but with this book, this is not something that I'm concerned about. I'm going to be on the New York Times bestseller list, or I'm going to make $1 million on this. This is something that the profits are going back to fund in local communities. If there's a book signing in Denver, for example, that's going to the Rocky Mountain Wildlife Fund, 100% of the profits. The one in Kentucky is going to a nature preserve, Nolan, nature preserve there that rescues wildlife, you know, endangered and things like that. And so wherever these events are, thinking local and giving to the things that you're passionate about, it may not be money. It might be your time. It might be your prayers, your thoughts, your support. But think locally, what is one thing you can do that your intuition is already telling you to do? And if you can do that, you're going to live a fulfilled life, no matter what.
Oh, spoken as a true sacred changemaker. Thank you, my friend. It has been amazing to have you on the podcast. I have loved every second of our conversation. And I know our audience will have gained so many insights. So Tabitha, thank you for stopping by.
Thank you for having me. I love this group and your podcast. And it's been a joy to chat with you, my friend.
Okay, guys, that is all we have time for today. Thank you so much for listening in. Now, before we go, I do want to remind you that all of the resources and the links for our guests in the show notes at sacredchangemakers.com. And a big thank you to the Sacred Changemakers Inner Circle, who are our podcast sponsors, and also our extended community, who are helping us make a global impact aligned with the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals, all visible on our website. And if you're looking for more soul in your life and business, if you too have a sense that, you know, maybe you have a calling, maybe you're here to make a bigger impact or simply connect with others on your change-making journey. If our episode resonated with you today, I hope you'll consider joining us. Again, you can find out more at sacredchangemakers.com. But for now, I just want to say thank you. Thank you for listening. Thank you for your intention and efforts to make our world a better place. Until next time. Lots of love.